The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Reveille, reveille, donks.
Look at us now, tip to tip. This is our life. This is our passion. That's the spirit we bring to this show.
I'm Luke Thomas.
I'm Brian Campbell.
This is Morning Combat.
Ooh, better late than never. Let's put it that way. Sorry for the delay, but we are here Monday, UFC 272 post-fight to talk about some Ramirez Pedraza, some Chocolatito, a whole lot to do. Hello, everyone. This is Morning Combat, and I am merely one half of your hosting duo. My name is Luke Thomas. I join you from the capital of Estados Unidos right here in Washington, D.C., joined by the Viceroy slash Prince of CT, Connecticut, my friend and yours, Big Beige, Brian Campbell. Hi, Brian Campbell.
Luke, I've just been told through my earpiece by our bosses that they will be capturing that before the start of the live stream meltdown that you had on our staff and selling it as an exclusive MK NFT, Luke. Okay, so somebody out there can be the sole owner of that. Wow, Luke. Wow.
Well, I mean, you're sitting there playing, you know, armpit farting noises while my devices don't work and I can't connect. And I can't even talk to the guy who can help me connect because BC's like...
So, looks like, you know, the adults are trying to speak. Yes. Okay.
I got a little frustrated. I am sorry about that. But I was trying to get to the show on time. But here we are, BC. I'm happy to be here. UFC 272 will lead the show today. But as I mentioned, we got a lot to get to. Plus your questions on DMs from Donks. We're going to see BC's Have You Seen This Shit? We have a lot to do. So thumbs up on the video if you're watching on YouTube. Please hit subscribe for our new subscribers. Welcome. We do this three times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 11 a.m. in the East, BC. For the folks who don't know, what is available at our merch store, morningcombat.store?
Well, it is St. Patrick's Day season, Luke. So if you go to Morning Combat Store, morningcombat.store, excuse me, we have a brand new exclusive line of our MK-themed St. Patrick's Day. Drink them up. Have a great time. I believe we even have, you know, a little art to look at here to whet the palate, to tease you, to tickle around the North Rim, if you will, Luke.
Okay.
I think we have that.
Do we have that? Let's see that if we have that. I know that
I was promised we had that. Anyway, morningcombat.store. Go check it out. We got new stuff and it's fantastic. Yeah.
There you have it. And of course, Showtime is the label that pays. Go to showtime.com, 30-day free trial. If you like it, you can keep it. If not, you can pound sand. But you get everything on there, including what's ever available on demand. So that's always good stuff there. You can email the show, morningcombat@gmail.com. That's forever and ever if you want to reach us for fan subs, dead wrongs, anything else. And yeah, BC, I think that's it. You ready to get the show started?
Yeah, let's rock. Let's give them, you know, everything we got left, Luke, okay? Let's just empty it.
Let's empty the tank. All right, topic number one here. And again, last apologies for the delay. Here we go. Topic number one, BC, I did the post-fight show, so I can't wait to hear what you have to say. Colby Covington basically dominates Jorge Masvidal en route to a unanimous decision. I think he had a 50-45, a 50-44, and a 49-46, but that basically tells the story of the fight. BC, overall impressions of the fight, and then specifically, what did you learn about Colby Covington in this contest?
Yeah, look, you know, in the end, it played out how we all thought was certainly the most likely outcome. It's why the betting odds were that way, with a 3-1 favorite for Covington, who had the freshness advantage, and certainly, most importantly, that stylistic advantage. It was right in some of our ways we predicted and look at it coming in terms of what version of Masvidal it would be. But it went to script for the most part. And what I learned is that Colby Covington is still very much at age 34 of the true elite of this game, right in that same category, in my opinion, with the Max Holloways, Robert Whittakers, Dustin Poirier's right now, who are some of the best UFC fighters who are not champions at the moment, right on the edge of the top 10 pound for pound, makes smart adjustments, showed his toughness in that little hiccup in round four, which is, you know, probably going to be more of a conversation on what Masvidal didn't do after that moment. But I'm still seeing a very complete fighter, Luke, in whether you love him or you hate him, but it's set up for you to hate him, to be fair. That pivot, which he laid the groundwork during fight week of the, you know, I hate Dustin Poirier too, guys. Don't forget that. That instant pivot afterwards shows he understands, Luke, where he's truly at. He's not going to get a third shot at Usman anytime soon. So you need money fights. And if he can continue to, like this Masvidal fight, to fight guys who, you know, a little bit older, not as well-rounded, his cardio, his wrestling, what makes him great is very much the top of the sport, Luke. Those categories, cardio, wrestling, he knows what the hell he's doing, and he's rounded out his game enough to make sure there were no, you know, there were hiccups, but there was no problem at the end of the day.
The calling out of Poirier, you seem to believe that that is, you know, designed to get a big name fight, right? And to sort of stay relevant by virtue of that. Do you think that the UFC will make him fight the winner of either Luque versus, who's he fighting here, Bilal Muhammad, or the winner of Burns versus Chimaev? Where does Colby even, because listen, Poirier, I don't know if he's going to take that fight. He might, we'll have to see, but there's a decent chance he doesn't. So where does that leave Colby?
If you're Colby at 34, you know you're still the best you've ever been. This is where the physical and the mental and the experience comes together. This is the best version of Colby Covington right now. He knows his window is closing, though, Luke, and I don't think it's advantageous for him to go back to the ladder and go through the top two or three guys to try to just get back into the conversation of an Usman fight. He needs to stay on the outside looking in so that if Usman suddenly retires or moves up in weight, or if Chimaev just kicks the damn door in, suddenly Colby's still right there, almost, to be fair, in a Joanna-type situation where you're this big gun just waiting. But he doesn't have to sit out, Luke. Him planting the seeds for a Poirier fight, him knowing that if he can just keep throwing out that bait at the McGregor types, at the Diaz types, at the guys that he knows could make him big fights, I can't see him losing any of those in this, you know, greater BMF sort of gray area between two divisions here. But I wonder, though, what your spirit of your question was, what if they try to push him into it, the UFC? You saw Dana and Colby didn't even shake hands on stage at the ceremonial weigh-in. And from Dana's comments that, he's like, look, Colby's an asshole. You know what I mean? Like, he's a great fighter and we deal with him and we make it work. But, I don't know, because I think they'd have to be smart enough to realize that he may not be an A premier pay-per-view brand, but he's building and has built now two fights with Usman and now this one, a legitimate following. I don't think you'd want to stuff that if you're UFC and force him back into some kind of number one contender fight. I think that you can make this type of fight that we saw him against a fan-friendly action guy a few times over, Luke.
My read on this, BC, I don't wonder if you agree, is they, it's the old press conference. Was it Singletary? No, that was I Want Winners. But it was,
yeah,
they are who we thought they were.
Dennis Green, it was, yeah.
That's right, yes. They are who we thought they were. Jorge was probably the better striker, although at times, certainly the volume and pressure on the feet from Colby snuck through. But it was really, obviously, as we know, he had 6 of 15 takedowns. In the fifth round, he had 4 minutes and 34 seconds of control time, really putting it on him in that fifth and final frame, getting 2 of 2 takedowns, right? Just on him like white on rice. And there were these other moments where he got dropped briefly in the fourth. Obviously, I think Masvidal had a decent second round. But in general, the fight just kind of played along the path where it's like they're probably know each other really well. Colby is going to be the better wrestler and will grind out positions en route to a decision victory that was relatively ho-hum. That's exactly what you got. I do think we saw a couple of new wrinkles from Colby on the ground where he would play in guard, not really try to pass, and then do more ground and pound. That has been something that has plagued him a little bit. Against Lawler, he had almost no ground and pound because he was so worried about controlling position. This time, BC, I felt like he managed different positions that gave him different tools in different scenarios. So that's better than being one note about it all the time. So I did see some growth, but here's the thing. We had talked about this before the fight. He didn't have any wins over anyone existing before Saturday over a current top, I think, 10 or 15 ranked welterweight. Now he does have one. He is 34. He's the best he's ever been. It's just, here's where I can't decide what's going to happen, or I can't figure it out. I think there's a strong chance. Yes, of course. Listen, Poirier could take the fight, but I have a feeling he wants to deny Colby that. And by the way, That's a terrible fight for Dustin Poirier. I don't like his chances in that one. I think Poirier's
probably... Those early odds were like minus 400 Covington saw that were posted yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, that might be even generous, to be quite honest with you. Colby's bigger and has that skill set we just saw. So for me, the thing is, it's like, did Colby have a great, strong performance? Not a doubt about it. He looked really good. He deserved that victory. Clean, easy, minus a couple of hiccups here or there. But I guess there's still these questions about me. I assume a guy who gives Kamaru really sort of takes that de facto number two spot. But there are... There's this new entire fresh wave of welterweights that Colby has not really put his hands on yet, or vice versa. Look, and I think that remains unresolved.
Absolutely. And look, if Chimaev wins his next fight, you know, I think he should get the title shot. And I've said that you could already have given it to him, which is somewhat, you know, people, okay, I get it, but, you know, don't be crazy. But I really believe that. If it doesn't go that direction, if Kamaru beats Leon Edwards and then tries to either take a little bit of time off or whatever, if you end up seeing Chimaev versus Colby Covington, Luke, that's going to be, I mean, that could be another number. Even though I'm saying, hey, Colby, I don't think you have to go back to the well and try to become the number one contender, because I'm not even sure there's an appetite for a third fight with you and Usman. You know, go stay a pay-per-view trash-talking action guy, even though you're, you know, really cringe. I mean, I don't mean action guy because he fights to his strengths. You know, it's like, I wrote a story about it on CBS Sports yesterday. It's like, you know, it's not the Mayweather thing exactly. You know, Mayweather would bark and get you mad at him, but then have these brilliant defensive, you know, kind of boring-ish at times victories. But, there's some smoke and mirrors in that with Covington of making himself feel like he's a bigger brand than he actually is. He's smart at that. And as much as I'm saying, hey, go back and just make money and just make big fights, if it's not next for Usman versus Chimaev for any reason, Chimaev versus Colby is, I mean, God, Luke, that's just a hell of a damn fight that would tell us so much in so many ways about both.
It really would. Or a Gilbert Burns fight. A Gilbert Burns fight would tell us a lot, too, to be honest. Although I grant that the Chimaev one has a certain mystique to it that we couldn't ever really ignore. Last question on Colby, then we'll talk about Masvidal for a brief moment. In your mind, where does he rank among most popular active UFC fighters?
You're talking about Colby?
Yes.
In terms of their potential pay-per-view brand?
Yeah, like after Saturday, how popular
their value.
Is he?
Their value. And look, there are different kinds of pay-per-view values, A side and B side, you know, as opponents. Colby's largely playing the opponent role up to this point. And you can even argue, even though he was the higher ranked guy, which is why his name was first in the promotion. I didn't realize that. A lot of people, came at me and updated me on that. So thank you. Is he now an A side? I think is an important question. And if you do consider him a potential A side, I don't know, Luke, before I answer your question, he seems to have the formula down at how to be a great B-side, right? Like,
yes.
Match him with anybody. He'll trash talk the shit out of them. He may end up, you know, probably winning because these seems like, he's not fighting guys on the equal level if he's going to stay in this lane. But in that regard, it's Conor number one. Is it John Jones number two?
Izzy's up there.
Izzy.
Kamaru's popular.
You've got certain guys like Poirier or Holloway who need the right matchup. They need that right dance partner. But given that Covington might be, I mean, you can make the argument that Covington's the best pay-per-view B-side of the moment. Like, he's the number one guy in that category, Luke.
Yes, I think that's probably accurate. Whether he remains to be the number two welterweight over time, I guess we'll have to see. Let's talk about Jorge Masvidal, BC. To me, this was really, I mean, I guess you could say this about the knockout loss to Kamaru, but it was so, not, you know, it didn't happen instantaneously, but the fight was relatively short. This was the first time where, okay, granted, the guy had to fight Colby Covington, who is potentially the second best welterweight on the planet. We all know how good he is. I thought Jorge looked a little bit old. Not terrible, not over the hill, but he was wearing it physically in a way where I don't know that he ever... Positionally, it didn't look the same, but just from body language, speed, nimbleness, the ability to scramble through, he just looked like he was 37, was starting to play again, not the determining factor, but playing a factor, BC. Do you agree? And where does he go from here?
It's hard for me to disagree based on how I perceive it, because it's related to that. It's just sort of like, Luke, like, Did I expect a better version of him? Yeah, I mean, I predicted him. I was like, look, it's not likely, but I just have this feeling. And there were moments in this fight, even though this fight goes down as a one-sided fight, there were particular moments, and we sort of nailed it, right? The fourth round punch in which he dropped Colby to a knee briefly, and it's like, dude, follow that up, mixed with, I thought he won the second round. I thought he had moments in both rounds one and three where it wasn't enough to win a round or make that argument, but you're like, if he can keep making these adjustments or stay in that lane, there's something here. So all of that was true. I think he did put in the best training camp he knew how for this version of him. And I think he did have a good mix of explosiveness with trying to set it up, but there was no next level magic to be had. But, and I think more importantly, Luke, he doesn't have the stamina for five round championship elite level fighting. And certainly not at this point. And, you know, when I mentioned, I think, you know, he had the best training camp he knows how to have. He's a guy even with that 2019, which now is like this aberration moment where the perfect version of him came form, Luke. And it's easy to mythologize that and overrate it, of course. And I didn't even think he should have won the Fighter of the Year that year. I thought it was Adesanya, but, you know, that's not to take away from him here. You get the point. I think that's always held him back, Luke, from really getting to that highest level. I'm not sure he ever truly figured out how to get the best of him physically, stamina-wise, cardio-wise, so that there's never a question. And I know that's hard for a guy like him who lives and dies with the explosion, and that's going to, you know, pull at your gas tank. But especially in that fourth round, to not be able to follow up on the moment that you wait for. You set up that moment the whole damn fight, and he had nothing to pour on that, Luke. It's disappointing because he did come in with the eye of the tiger, I thought, but the fuel wasn't there.
This particular moment that Jorge's in reminds me a little bit of like the pre-explosion Jorge, where granted he had a bad loss in the one prior to this, and then this one was pretty dominant. So in some ways the losses look worse. In fact, that's the point I was going to make. Like, the things that troubled him before are still troubling him. Now, granted, we're at a more elite level, so I don't think that the old guys who used to trouble him, if they were still around or whatever, would still do that. Or, you know, if he had the skill set back then, it wouldn't be the same. But I'm saying, like, as he's graduated through, yes, he's gotten better, but the challenges have gotten tougher. So that problem, while he has, I'm sure, worked diligently to address it, it still kind of holds him back, which is these grapplers who just are relentless with it, they don't necessarily sub him out, they don't necessarily beat him up too bad, but they definitely neutralize him. And he just looked neutralized. And then this is the difference, BC. In previous fights, he looked neutralized, but there was a little bit more scrambling, a little bit more activity, a little bit more hustle. This time, that part was missing too. Again, give credit to Colby for taking it out of him, but it just felt like he was wearing it in ways I hadn't seen him wear it under these kinds of conditions previously.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Luke. And you wanted more from him. You wanted him to take that ultimate chance and risk pouring it all out to win. And, you know, is it the lack of elite level stamina that held him back from even trying that? Or was it an unwillingness, Luke? I'm not sure. I saw that unwillingness in the first Usman fight, and I was hypercritical, even though it was a short camp and he had that built-in excuse. I don't see, you know, the second Usman fight, he seemed more willing to let it go. And look, you just saw what happened. You ran into one of the greatest fighters of all time, to be fair. I didn't see that mindset that is needed to create the Askren moment. You're right. You know what I'm saying, Luke? I mean, I'm asking a lot of this guy, right, for this moment. But this is probably, if we're being honest, the best fighter Jorge's going to fight for the best of his rest of his career. He'll make bigger fights, maybe more fan, you know, McGregor. I mean, he's always going to be a sexy guy to throw in with anybody. But this is probably the last great fighter that he will have fought. And I don't know if he gave himself the best chance to win, Luke.
You're talking about that fourth round or whatever round it was. Was it the fourth?
I'm talking about
the fourth, but
it was the fourth. But I'm saying, while it's easy to just say, oh, he didn't have the gas, I don't know if he had the desire to risk it all and try to finish him there. It was too safe in the end, Luke.
It's interesting. I mean, he certainly regretted it. In his post-fight comments, he said that he thought after he hurt him like that he didn't want to just jump in because he thought Colby was going to shoot on him and he didn't want to give it up. But in the end, he let the guy off the hook. And he was right about it. He was like, it's only about a five-second window where I had to pounce. And he didn't. And he ultimately paid for it. Last thing on this, and we'll talk about the co-main event, BC. Do you think that does Masvidal's loss, it hurts his stock. But I did see an interesting wrinkle, which means people think because his relative ability has declined, that it makes a Conor fight more likely because now Conor has a better chance against him than maybe he did previously. Agree or disagree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a lot of people are like, well, if Masvidal is showing you at 37 that he's not of the elite level anymore, and you know, he got pretty close in 2019. He got above it, I thought. But then, you know, why would he sign a brand new contract? Well, he's going to be so damn marketable against everybody, and it's going to go in the predictable arc. You know what I mean? There's going to be fights in the beginning that he can win in big fights that he's going to be a part of where he may not have a chance, and it's selling his name. And then eventually he, you know, as long as he'll stay, he'll be a great guy to match against guys coming up that you really need to test. And I think in the short period, Luke, there's a few different potential pay-per-view bangers. I mean, it's not just you. I mean, you know, the Nate rematch, we may not have this massive appetite for it, but that's a fan-friendly fight to make as well.
It certainly is. No doubt about it. So we'll have to see what happens next.
And what about him and Poirier, Luke? No? Him and Poirier?
I think they're boys. I don't think, nah. I mean, it could be a big fight to your point, but
But they are too close. You're right. Too close.
I don't think they want it, so we'll have to see. All right, let's go to the co-main event, BC. Rafael Dos Anjos took on Renato Moicano, Grande Moicano, 4 or 5 days notice, had to travel from South to North America. It was a tough assignment, and it only got worse from there. That was an absolute shellacking. Now, credit to Moicano in a level of tough that is difficult to describe. Nearly gets stopped in the third. I couldn't believe that they came out for the fifth. Nearly get stopped there. Referee Mark Goddard says, you got 30 seconds to turn this around before I call it. But he still fought the entire 25 minutes. Again, made a decent account of himself in the fifth, all things considered. But it was no way he was going to win. BC, should that fight have been stopped?
Yeah, it should have been. It really should have been because he had already proved his point. And when, look, I got it wrong in predicting that Moicano would get the upset here. But what I didn't get wrong was predicting that Moicano would, even with the challenges of this being a 5-round fight on short notice, which, you know, it makes no freaking sense why this was a 5-round fight under any circumstance. Really, I mean, even the Nate Diaz one shouldn't have been, to be fair. Yes, there are certain fights, especially number one contender fights, that sometimes you do wish could have been 5 rounds. But this wasn't necessarily that. When you add in the short notice. But even with that, Luke, I was brave enough to pick him because I felt like he knew this was his moment. So when you've got a wild horse like that, a guy that has so much pride and is willing to go through it all, the fact that they made him, to be fair, you know, you could even argue as big as this reward would have been, short notice, pay-per-view, co-main event, beating a legend like RDA, you know, you can make a couple leaps in the rankings. Would it have even been worth it? To land that Fury rally in the late fifth? And I know there's certain, you know, tougher Just Bleed fans that are like, well, see, the fact that they didn't stop it, you know, we almost created this crazy ending and that justified it. It didn't justify it. The body language was in the scary mode. He had already been concussed and you could have stopped it, I think, 2 rounds earlier during that flurry where his head snapped back. And by the time we got to where the deformation of the face and the eye, and then you add in that cage side doctor, and I don't have his name at the moment, Luke, and I'm not here to, you know, absolutely crap on him because that's a tough job and he's been a high profile one for a while. But to just almost throw his hands in the air and be like, yeah, you know, that's cool. You can do what you want, you know, to the ref and basically say, I don't really have a recommendation for you. That's really what he said without saying it. You know, I don't really care, really. You know what I mean? You want to go with it? Go ahead. I'm going to put all the pressure on you, Mark Goddard, which it just doesn't make any sense. That's a role with deep responsibility, Luke. And he was just too ho-hum about it. And Luke, the guys on the broadcast nailed it. That fifth round flurry from Moicano was only really possible because RDA showed humanity and took his foot off the gas and didn't want to essentially take a chunk out of Moicano's career in a fight that was already decided. And I think, you know, I think Moicano got pissed and he could smell that. And that's why you sort of had that finish the way it was. But, damn, dude, no, this shouldn't have happened, Luke. There was at least three, I thought, can't turn away moments of it needs to be stopped right now. And once you get up to, you know, one, you missed it or you wanted it to be an exciting fight. We're up to three. We're up to this guy may not see again if this keeps going. I mean, what are we doing?
I just don't understand how we get to these positions. What are people looking at where they're like, I'm not sure what to do here? He nearly gets stopped in the third. The fourth round, for the most part, wasn't a battering up until like the very end of the fourth round, in which case it was a battering. because that was when he got sliced open and further demolished. And he goes back out for the fifth, and the doctor's looking at him and looking at him and looking at him. And I don't, you know, I don't know what the right answer is in all of these cases. I'm not a medical professional, and I'm not a licensed referee. And I think Mark Goddard was trying to do something because he was like, you know, the 30-second warning and whatnot. But dude, it's just I can't believe we keep having to have these conversations event after event after event. The level of risk analysis here by corners consistently at the elite level in mixed martial arts is poor. BC, we're going to talk about it later. Chocolatito fought on DAZN over the weekend, and his opponent, Ramirez, Martinez. Yes, I was thinking about the Pedraza fight. But Martinez, dude, through halfway through that fight, and by the eighth or ninth round, he's not cut. I mean, he's losing this fight pretty badly, but he's not cut. He hasn't been dropped. He's firing back at least somewhat. They consistently talk in that fight about whether it needs to be stopped. Let me explain something to you folks. The level of abuse that Martinez took in that fight relative to Moicano is a minute fraction. And even in boxing, they were like, I don't know, man, this one's looking bad for him for different reasons. Not that it was necessarily an epic beating, but that Martinez just really had no hope for victory. MMA is a little bit different, and I understand, BC, making a different calculus about chances because MMA is so volatile. However, if you nearly get stopped in the third, you lost the fourth, you have just one round, the doctor's giving you the old evil eye, the referee is telling you you have 30 seconds, letting the fight continue to that point, what purpose could it possibly serve? The guy came in on 5 days, quickly, 5 days notice from South to North America, five-round fight, granted up a weight class or whatever it was, catch weight 160. Dude, his chances of winning that were slim to none to begin with. After the third and after the fourth, it was infinitesimally small. It is not rational or, frankly, all that ethical to send him back out in the fifth.
Yeah, yeah. I disagree that his chances of winning were as low as you say because he is an extremely talented guy. No, he didn't get the proper training camp, but like, I mean, and, you know, we saw the depths of what he's made of, and obviously that was the scary part. But I don't blame his corner, even though they were wrong, because there's so much emotion built into that, that that's why we have the extra fence, right, around the lion cage. That's why we have the doctor and the commission and the referee. So, you know, it felt like as a team, they failed Moicano. You know, and
fair
that's
enough.
There's
blame to go around. I don't think that's fair. I guess my point is, BC, you've been around as long as I have. We're roughly the same age, man. Not just in boxing and MMA. How many times have you seen guys take fights like, not exactly like this, but put in situations where a fight should have been stopped and it wasn't, it was brutal or whatever, and then later on in their career, they're like, maybe it should have been stopped. And a lot of times, those guys don't have the money at the end. Moicano, by the way, express and clear about his need for more money, his like burning desire to finally have some big paychecks. He got half of one here. I don't know if the UFC took care of him in the after the fact. I guess we'll have to see.
Dana said at the press conference, Dana basically did a BC without saying it. Dana was like, hey, John Nash, yeah, we're not going to tax him on it. We're going to give him a giant bag, probably three of them just filled with cash. I mean, look, I mean, not only for keeping the show on the road, but good God, man.
Yeah, good. And he needs time off too, man. The guy has taken brutal knockouts before too. That's the other part. It's like, dude, just what chance does someone have, even as talented as Renato Moicano, when you've got an experienced, super skilled opponent beating the fuck out of you through four rounds? It's irrational to send them out. One last thing on this, BC, and we'll move along, which is this is the point I made on the post-fight show. Everyone keeps saying, well, the corner knows them best, and the corner knows them best. Right, the corner does know them best. We don't know them better than the corner. But clearly, it is obviously true at this point that that knowledge of that fighter and that relationship to that fighter, it is not sufficient to make more informed and credible choices about when to throw the towel. And in fact, it biases them in the opposite direction towards their strengths away from their weaknesses.
Absolutely. In some cases, the emotion's too high or just the, look, this is my boy. A lot of times the father trainers are the ones that'll throw the towel the latest, right? You know, and there's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of emotion there, but again, that's why you have the built-in fence around it. By the way, RDA, Luke, still just a fucking legend. And the fact that he did seem to show his countrymen, like, you know, some mercy in round five. I mean, that's the chef's kiss to, like, that's a real man right there, Luke.
And by the way, if you don't think he was showing mercy, go look at the fourth and fifth round of what RDA did to Pettis. Let me tell you very clearly, RDA was putting his foot on the brake on this one. Last thing on RDA, BC, where is he in this division? Because that was actually a good win. I mean, it was, you know, wasn't what it was supposed to be. Doesn't get the Fazeev quality win, but he did what he was supposed to. Where is he?
I would say he's in probably one of the top positions where if a main, you know, a title opportunity falls through, somebody gets, you know, COVID or somebody gets whatever, that he's going to be the call for emergency, which is obviously not a bad place to be in to cash in big paydays. But, you know, he said after he'd love a title shot next. It's not what he's going to get. It depends, Luke. He's showing you that he's still in a form where you just don't need to make legend versus legend fight. Like, he might be one more win away from a real title shot, not a last minute one, not a, hey, we, you know, former champion, we love the name. He's still playing. He's still in the game, Luke. So, I don't want to see him against the Tony Ferguson level. You know, I want to see him against somebody right freaking there. Where, off the top of your head, what would make rankings wise the best matchup here, the smartest matchup, if you are looking at it as that way, that like, no, he's still, you know, one of the three or four best in this division at the moment?
Chandler. Chandler is ranked fifth. He's ranked sixth. That might change a little bit. Seven is Ferguson. Eight is Hooker. You could do Hooker, but he would be going backwards at that point. So
God, RDA and Chandler. Oh my God, Luke.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, that's like in wintertime when you step into the hot tub, you know, like snow's coming down and it's like, oh my God, this is going to be great, but it's so cold. And then you're like, oh shit, that's everything that I want. And
BC, true or false, that's a different fight if it's five rounds versus three rounds, right? That's a much more winnable fight in either direction if you expand it out to main event level.
Yes. That's a great point. And no matter how many rounds you set it for, that first one's going to be the best thing that ever happened to you, Luke. So just, you know, just get ready. All right.
All right. Fair enough. We go now to the feature fight of the UFC 272 main card. How about this? This guy was the biggest standout performer to me on the entire main card. Bryce Mitchell. He handled Edson Barboza. He had a 30-26, the 30-25 on one of the cards. And I can't say I necessarily disagree with that, BC. He went 4-for-4 on takedowns. That's the most efficient and the most takedowns Barboza's ever given up in a UFC fight. Khabib did that, but had to get, I think, 13 attempts to do it. Now, granted, Khabib had a lot more ground and pound than he did, which explains the ability for Barboza to move. But either way you look at it, dude, he made smart decisions. He executed on a game plan. He stayed out of trouble. He took minimal damage. He dropped Barboza and completely controlled him on the ground. Dude, Bryce Mitchell's a star, is he not?
He just made the leap. You just saw it, you know, and he's got the motor and he's got the technique and the craft, but he's got something special in the intangibles department. And I think that I owe him a little bit of an apology. Look, that I had never interviewed him before. And that interview he did with Ariel Helwani was, you know, headline producing for a reason, Luke. It was aggressive. It was, you know, it's a man standing up for his beliefs, which you may or may not have respected, but it allowed me and a lot of people to paint a picture of who this guy might be. But yet I'd heard everyone say, oh no, this kid is incredible. A gentleman, like, you know, this kid is a genuine person. I think the build up to the fight, meaning his fight week interviews, and unfortunately we didn't get the chance to connect at the end. And the post fight, you know, press conference, if you listen to it, he's an interesting human being, Luke, but I think he's solid. And there's a side to him, right? But I think, you know, for where he needs to be emotionally to climb this ladder and take on the killers that are there, given his age and relative lack of experience against the elite level. Now we're starting to get there, right? But you know, relative lack of it. He's got an old soul poised to him, Luke, that is really a big part of why he can go in there and execute a performance like this, knowing that Barboza is dangerous at every second, but knowing also he's going to have to put a pace on him to wear him out and take away that danger, and he did it perfectly. And in Barboza, I think you're starting to see him go, right? You know, the little bit old man came out of him. Unfortunately, lack of output was really the thing. You know, they talked about on the broadcast, too comfortable to stay on his back. Some of that true, but it made it easier because Bryce Mitchell was going for it, Luke. And you know, got the camo trunks and at least he's showing us that there's a few different sides to him as a person. And I think a lot of that is also what makes him a great fighter, Luke.
Yeah, I mean, the guy has his own ideas about the world that don't align with mine, but that's probably true, you could say, for almost every single UFC fighter. They see the world quite differently than most of us. And so, you know, that's sort of a different conversation. But when it comes to the fighter, I just don't know what people could possibly, not that he's a perfect fighter, no fighter is, but that was a sensational performance. BC, I had people saying that this was a setup fight for Bryce Mitchell. Are you fucking people insane? Number one, they were ranked 10th and 11th. So by virtue of just that, I think Mitchell was the 11th, by the way. So just by virtue of that, you often see guys who are right next to each other paired. Moreover, let me explain something to you. If you think that never before in UFC history have so many fighters routinely declined fights, we have it on pretty good authority that it's now more than ever. And so that makes it difficult to find fights. Now, I don't know exactly the origin of this one, how much they had to play games with it, but BC, while I grant, I'm in a complete agreement with you that Barboza definitely showed some signs of age and a little bit of shop warning-ness. But the point is, in terms of the level of ability, it was clear that Bryce had not fought someone as credentialed who was as battle-tested against the very best before, even if there may have been on paper some stylistic advantages. That's why you didn't get a finish. It's actually hard to do that against a guy like Barboza, even though some have. The point I'm trying to make here is, BC, this idea that like he was gifted an opponent to look good in is fucking stupid.
No,
and totally insane.
Did you hear the sound of those first couple leg strikes that Barboza opened the first round with? That Mitchell afterwards was like, "Look, my game plan was to check those, and after that first one, there was not going to be a need to ever try that again." I mean, like that was just, dude. This, come on. But again, Bryce Mitchell had to show us that he actually is looking to be potentially a great fighter in order to control somebody like Barboza like that. Because if he wasn't that good, Barboza's in that fight and, you know, probably has a conversation on the scorecards at the end of it.
I absolutely agree with that. Speaking of Barboza, this is probably, I don't know if any one fight, BC, represents the end. I mean, there's no end until he decides to hang him up. But what I'm trying to say is, you look at this performance, you look at the move down to 145, he wanted to go to 145 to get a title. And Jose Aldo went down to 135 and obviously is in a very different circumstance down there. I appreciate that Edson Barboza has wrung out the sponge to get all the water in it. But BC, I think it's out of water. The idea at this point that he can make a title push at 145, I just don't think there's any evidence for it. Now, that doesn't mean he has to retire tomorrow or he's some kind of scrub. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying if your goal is title, I just don't see a viable path for it.
No, it's not going to happen. And this was that opponent that was coming up that was going to tell us that. And we learned it, and it is what it is. And, you know, it's like, he's not retiring tomorrow, but I often think of like, what is the legacy of a guy like this? Like, he's so damn well respected, Barboza, because he's fought everybody and he's always been game as shit. I mean, that beating he took against Habib, Luke, like, that was one of those, like, is this necessary? Should we keep, you know what I mean? Like, that was just ridiculous. But reinventing his body, reinventing his game, if he wanted to just keep doing it because he loves it and, you know, maybe bank the biggest paydays he could probably get, which is what happens when you build a name at the end of your run. Moving back up to lightweight, there's a lot of fun action fights you can make, Luke, if you really wanted to.
Take an easier fight. Bryce Mitchell's a tough fight. Don't take fights like that. Take an easier fight if you just want to, because Barboza can still beat guys at this level. That seems to me true, but just not guys like Bryce Mitchell. That is not true.
Can I say something, Luke? And I just want to see a reaction. You know, maybe I'm a genius, or maybe you're just like, all right, BC, you're a lot of talk and Edson Barboza versus Conor McGregor at lightweight.
It's fun. Barboza's, you know, he could get tagged with a big punch. That's the only thing for him there. But the leg kicks, there's a lot of fun fights for Conor. Conor never has a shitty fight, right? Never.
You didn't get horned up from that. That was like.
Of all the possible choices, that's not my top five.
See, that's so interesting. So that's like an Eastern European woman on Instagram. You're like, all right, for some people, maybe, you know, BC, maybe, but, you know, give me that LBB. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. The old LBB, the famous LBBs. Okay, last thing on Bryce Mitchell, BC. Here's one thing I just want to point out. A lot of times we get these characters in MMA from all different parts of the world and all different parts of the country, and people love them for their character, and you should if that's a thing that appeals to you or not. If not, whatever, you can make a choice. But the one thing that should be put on Bryce Mitchell, again, as a fighter, you better put some respect on him, not just because he's good. He has a very modern skill set. He's not just out there winning with old farm strength and determination. No, he's winning with the very best practices of modern grappling, changing up between upper and lower body takedowns, chaining them together, advancing to mount, working through all these things with what the very best guys are doing in terms of best practices. I'm not saying he's the best grappler, but I'm saying his game much more closely mirrors what the very best are doing than what all the other guys are doing. And I hope people understand that.
Did you just take a shot at Brock Lesnar? Did I pull that hair out of the soup, Luke? Did you?
Yeah, I think you're inventing things.
I mean, come on, Luke. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't besmirch that guy, Luke. I mean, that tattoo sword on his chest, it's coming for you, Luke. Okay. Yeah.
That's. I'm desperately concerned. All right. For the rest of the UFC 272 card, we'll have it on extra credit here after the show. Number four, BC, Chocolatito got back to action against Julio Cesar Martinez via unanimous decision. Now, first things first, Chocolatito, 34 years old. This was on DAZN. Boy, he beat the fucking brakes off of Martinez. I give credit, BC, to Martinez for trying to put rallies together, especially in that 12th round. Not even rallies, but maybe just flurries. You know, just to kind of fight back a little bit with whatever way he could. But, dude, this was a master craftsman behind the wheel of a steamroller, and there was nothing Martinez could do. A, how impressed were you? And B, what specifically does this win set up for Gonzalez, which is Chocolatito?
Yeah, to answer your final question first is just to say, like, this shows he certainly still got it at 34, but this gets him right back to what this fight should have been, which is, you know, a monster fight. The trilogy with Juan Francisco Estrada for all the belts there, or maybe even a third dance with Srisaket Sorungvisai now that Chocolatito is just in a different place now. This Twilight Tour, I told you ahead of time, you know, watch this fight and savor it. Savor what this man is giving us at a time in a career where in this division, you're done, you know? And the fight was great to watch. Even though it became one-sided, the spirit that Martinez shows, they were talking up his like elementary school playground fight ability, and that's how he got his nickname, the Iron Boy. Dude, he still fights with that same exact spirit. They're like, yeah, all of his classmates were like, he's made of iron. We can't keep him away from just mauling us and tearing us to pieces. Dude, he's reckless. The form he throws is all over the place. But he brought the huevos, even though he had a lot of weight problems that almost canceled this fight. And, you know, you have to wonder if he was extra drained. Even though he's the guy moving up in weight from 112 to 115, you wonder if the next morning weigh-in he had to do to keep this fight from getting canceled just zapped him out even more. But he was going to be game, but it was also going to be the perfect canvas for Chocolatito to show us his artistry. Luke, he's not as quick as he used to be. His power isn't as massive here at this weight class, Chocolatito, as it was in the smaller weight classes, although he can still thump. But tell me if I'm wrong. Dude, he's a joy to behold. This is an artist.
God.
Like, this guy's, like, his craft, timing, technique, IQ, I mean, it's, and he's just a classy dude, a proud Nicaraguan, a classy dude. Like, I love this man. Remember when Tommy Heinsohn would be like, I love Walter, talking about McCarty, yeah, that Walter McCarty boner from here to Hanover, Mass, Luke? I got that for Chocolatito right now, okay? I'm rock hard with emotion. I love this man.
I don't quite feel the same sexual urges. However, what I would say is I share all of the general enthusiasm. Dude, if you are an MMA fan and you have access to this fight or you're a DAZN customer, you are only cheating yourself if you don't watch. Nobody loses except you if you don't see this guy. He is beyond special. And again, as BC indicated, he's not even necessarily, in fact, he's pretty much post-prime at this point, but he's still so good, you just can't believe it. Watch how many times, BC, he actually pushes Martinez back and forces Martinez constantly out of position loosely. So when he's even throwing those flurries, there's nothing behind it because he has no stable structure. Meanwhile, you heard the Sergio Martinez, the commentator, talk constantly about the footwork and the balance of Gonzalez, dude, he is constantly in. He is in good position, putting his opponents out of good position. Forward pressure angles, the whole nine yards. And dude, I've never seen a guy. I haven't seen a guy in a long time stand guard like this right in front of his opponent, motherfucker, right in front of his opponent, and make them miss constantly. We're not talking making guys miss at mid range. I'm talking making guys miss at close range, at phone booth range. And he did it over and over and then would counter offense on top of it. Dude, Martinez, this fight turned at the 44-second mark of the first round, and Chocolatito never looked back. If you don't watch this guy, you have only yourself to blame. You are missing out on a master craftsman who can still do elite work.
And if you get thirsty for more, watch the Estrada rematch from last year, arguably the fight of the year, and watch those two fights with Srisaket Sorungvisai. That first one, a thriller of a bloodbath. But Luke, good, great to see him get his moment. Let's make the big fights. Let's keep it going.
All right. Point number five, the other boxing event took place on Friday night. Interestingly, this one didn't have maybe quite as much buzz, but ended up being a much more competitive affair than I think even you and I thought, BC. So Jose Ramirez, he did get the win. That part went as expected over Jose Pedraza. However, I would say it was pretty competitive. Pedraza was game. Ramirez had enough tricks, BC, to get it done, true or false. So answer that one for me, and then tell me, does this performance to you inspire confidence about his chances to reclaim a belt at 140?
It really does. But what I love about it, and it's really, it's perfect that this is who Jose Ramirez is, because he's so honest and humble and hardworking and, you know, all those superlatives. He's like the guy you want, like, growing up in the house next to you or to date your daughter. Like, he puts that off. And it's... he had to kind of walk through some stuff. Like, this was a close competitive fight. It's him purposely not accepting a soft match. You know, he's going right back in there, gets a top contender after, you know, 10 months gone, lose his first loss, getting kind of handled in a close fight by a guy who just proved in Josh Taylor to be that much better than him. We were asking a lot of him, and not only was this fight great to watch, and I'll get into that in a second, Ramirez having to get hurt briefly a couple times, having to make so many key adjustments. And then Pedraza, damn, you got to give this guy credit. Coming on in rounds 11 and 12, and while Ramirez did feel the heat, the way he closed round 11 after getting tagged up early, like, yeah, Luke, with Josh Taylor exiting this division, he might be the guy right now. That now the titles will end up having to be sort of vacated and go off into different directions in the galaxy, and we'll have to start all over again at rebuilding matchups and trying to get back to an undisputed champion. But I wonder, in some mythical pound-for-pound ranking of those who are at 140 right now, not necessarily counting the guys that we think are moving up soon, Ryan Garcia, Tank Davis, I think I like him number one, again, just slightly above Regis Progre.
Wow.
And, of course, you know, a couple other very strong names that are still here and again that are coming. Because, Luke, the difference between – oh, sorry, my closing point about the humility after the fight, for him to say, look, I'm not going to lie to you, I got nervous for this fight. Like, it, you know, and this guy packs that arena in Fresno, and he represents the people of that valley, hardworking valley, and embodies them. And, you know, they packed that arena. That was a big-time fight atmosphere. And he admitted, Luke, you know, it was threatening to be too much pressure for me to come back and improve it all over again. And the way he did prove it, though, Luke, he's known for kind of being responsible, but being kind of straight ahead behind his high guard. And then he's creative with the combinations. He's adding so much more to his game, and you can see it. And he's got one of the best trainers in the game in Robert Garcia. But there was much more layers to what he does. He, for half the fight, he made Pedraza, the natural counterpuncher, sort of come at him, which was brilliant because Ramirez would close the distance with pressure, but then hang there and counter Pedraza. And you know, no counterpuncher likes to be consistently countered. And it was a constant sort of switch game of them making each other adjust. But Ramirez's adjustments were better. This was a competitive and close fight, but he's still the guy, Luke. I saw, arguably, the best version of him, even though he had to overcome a little, you know, he had to shake off a few big punches late in the later rounds.
Yeah, I don't have much to add to that, except I thought the exact same thing as you. It was Pedraza gave a really good account of himself, but fighting, if you go back and look at the highlights, for example, you just consistently, or play it fast forward, what you'll consistently see is, you know, with obviously a couple exceptions here or there, long stretches of the fight with Pedraza along the ropes. And he did impressive work there, BC, I thought, given the circumstances. I just thought if Ramirez is going to be able to back you up, even if there are some counter-punching opportunities there or whatever, and he did have his own moments, that was just too much of a metaphorical and literal back foot to beat Ramirez. That was not the best game plan to beat Ramirez, or at least not the one that I thought he could have. Yeah, I don't think that was a winning strategy beginning to end. However, the success he had with it was still quite admirable ultimately. I just thought Ramirez did enough of the dance leading to have Pedraza follow, and that made the difference over time. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, this was, yes, it is. And this was a Jose Pedraza fight, which means, yeah, like, it's so hard not to fall in love with him as a fighter because he's so smart and calculated and sneaky. And, you know, he embodies that nickname of the sniper and his counterpunching ability, and he's game as heck. But Luke, as you sort of warned coming in, he does sort of level out when he faces the, you know, elite level competition. And in some of those fights, he's one of those guys where, like, man, if he just did a little bit more, if he was a little bit more busy and active.
Right.
But I think what makes it frustrating to watch him is he's so damn elite or close to elite in a few different categories. But every time he tries to be great, he finds out he's just short of that. He's a very good fighter with some great tendencies, but man, he can't get over that highest hump. And he made Ramirez work, and he was still landing big shots late, like we talked about. And I thought Andre Ward was very critical of his strategy, but very fair too. It was a very, you know, good night on the mic from Andre. But this was the perfect test. I mean, this is a tough ass test, but Ramirez passed it. And Luke, I want to say one more thing. It's easy to think Ramirez is overrated, and I fell for that for a long time because, you know, he doesn't have fight-ending power, and he's not like a pure boxer. He's sort of this aggressive hybrid of smart boxing under the pressure fighter category. But his intangibles, his IQ, he's really fucking good. I mean, he's ready right now to get right back on the horse. So I can't wait to see what happens.
To your point, I like the point that you made, which was he didn't necessarily change a shit ton round to round. It was tiny little adjustments about what kind of space to give, what punch to select, when to throw, what setup to use, yada, 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 and so on in there. And he had to slowly implement it against the Pedraza, who was also trying to play that game with him. This was a real, I mean, we always overuse this constantly, but that was a real chess match, man. That was a real chess match,
yes,
where these guys constantly it was one move after the other, right?
It was that close to being my favorite type of fight, high-speed chess. It was more in that category. It wasn't an all-action fight, but there were great adjustments, great skill, toughness, crowd, environment. This was a very fun, I was entertained as heck watching this. So shout out to everybody involved there.
All right, that is it for our top five. It is now time for you to ask us questions. It is time for DMs from the Diggity Donks. We do these every Monday. You can email us, morningcombat@gmail.com, of course, but that's for Wednesdays and Fridays. We put up a post on Instagram. We put up a post on Instagram every Sunday, Morning Combat on Instagram, and then the producers pick five of those questions. All right, BC, here we go first. @_the_Gibsonator, another underscore. If Dustin Poirier beats Covington at 170, does that put him in a title fight? I guess, BC, I guess.
Yeah, 100%. That's the formula for how a star navigates the UFC, political matchmaking pay-per-view scheme. Like, that's the best way to do it, right? Yeah. I mean, Colby Covington's, he's still the number one contender, Luke, you know?
Okay, gun to your head. No BS. Gun to your head. Does Poirier take that fight? Like, make a call.
No. Does he accept it or win it? Which one he asked?
Does he accept it?
So I'm glad you brought that back up, because I meant to make this point earlier. I like what you said. Oh, maybe he would just say F you, Colby, and not give him the payday in the fight and the opportunity to sort of, you know, be a bastard and do it on a, you know, large scale against his wife and child. But I think it comes down to what are Poirier's options in the moment. If Poirier has a bigger pay-per-view fight to make, he's going to make it. But I think Poirier would be willing to do it, knowing that there's real, you know, real necessary motivation in there to want to punch this guy right in the damn face. And also, it's going to move. It's going to make him money. And that's, I think, where Poirier is, not in some selfish, you know, way, but, you know, he's a humanitarian in a lot of ways too. But I think that's what he's chasing, big fish. If Colby's the biggest fish of the moment, I think he takes it, Luke. I do think, though, the concerns you showed about how bad of a matchup is for Poirier are legit, absolutely legit.
I mean, he's Colby's bigger, and then, you know, Dustin was joking on Twitter the other day, like, you know, about some pain that I think it was like some, you know, tweet had gone viral, like, giving birth is the most pain a human can suffer, and he quote tweeted and be like, you ever been choked out from the back twice in two title fights? You know, just sort of saying like the pain of that, not like the literal pain, but the significance of it really bothered him.
Yeah.
You know, you would imagine Colby's not like Demian Meyer from the back, but he can get there and he can threaten with it. I don't know, man. That's a bad fight
and
for Poirier.
Our producer, Mikey Mormel, reminded me that Dustin did give that comment where he said he wouldn't let Colby make money off of him and that he would fight Colby outside of the ring for free. And, you know, and I get that this is something that rightfully Dustin as a man is like, nah, F you. But I also think he's a businessman, Luke. So that's the point of that. Yeah.
From at Custom Props 1. Would it benefit the UFC to make more non-title pay-per-view main events with their stars like Diaz, Masvidal, and Connor, and then stack pay-per-view cards with multiple low-selling champions? In other words, make three title fight pay-per-views with low-selling pay-per-view champions. What do you think?
All right, so what he's specifically asking, and it's not that we don't ever see non-title pay-per-views, it's just rare in this era, right? It used to be a thing that happened a lot more when there weren't as many options or weight divisions or what have you. But specifically putting non-title attractive fight pay-per-views, grudge matches, whatever have you, all action fights, and putting title fights below it. I think that would be a smart move. And they've gone against that, right? They never want it. You know, the title fight always has to be a top at the end
right,
of the
that's
day.
So that's the part. It's like, from a commercial standpoint, would it make sense to put, let's just make something up, Diaz, Masvidal 2. Put that at the top of the card and then put somebody like Shevchenko, who is obviously well-respected, but not like the biggest sales star.
It would make a ton of sense. It would make and it's surprising they don't already do that, because they make a lot of decisions that we debate on this show, whether that was controversial or not, fair or whatever. The business always wins out, Luke. You know, they always figure out what's best for business in a very McMahon-like way. You know what I'm saying?
That's all true. I don't disagree. But here's where I'm at, BC. It's like, dude, what's wrong with the UFC business in terms of their ability to succeed? Basically nothing. They're killing it. If anything, they're a monopoly, right? Bordering on it, depending on one's perspective. Like, they are the 800-pound gorilla in this industry times 1,000. So the question you have to ask yourself is, what is it to be gained by doing that? Yes, there is something to be gained. And it's not even to say that if they did a Diaz Masvidal 2 and then Shevchenko as the co-main or something, that Shevchenko wouldn't also benefit. But there also is something to be said for, like, respecting weight class champions and giving them their due as people, where, yes, we might suffer a little bit on the sales end by how we position who's on cards and where, but we are going to honor what these champions mean to us by giving them preeminent billing. I would hate to lose out on that. I could understand this argument if the business was suffering, but they're killing it. So why
do that? With that ESPN deal alone, this is pretty much a non-starter, right? Of course they make aggressive pay-per-view main event decisions to make the matchups even, like, that's why you would see Oliveira McGregor, for example, you know, this year, if the stars align or what have you. I mean, it's why it would make a lot of sense, but they don't need to. And I miss those days. Do you, true or false, Luke? And Dana is what he is. I mean, Dana White is entertaining as shit. Whatever you want to say about him, when he's on the microphone, like, it's a thing. Like, you watch it. I mean, of course, like he's, that's why, part of why he's so successful. But I don't know where I was going with that, Luke. I fell right off the side of the cliff. All right. You know, I mean, I'll tell you what.
Did you take the eighth Delta flight on the way?
No, I didn't. I wish I did, though. I wish I could get the extra leg room to find my brain again. But, you know,
that's okay.
We had a good run, Luke.
We had a great run for as long as it lasted, BC. From at TJ_Padro, do you guys believe Jalen Turner could be a contender at 155? Seems like he is huge for the division. So far has looked great on the scale and is just effing people up. Think he's a problem for a lot of guys. BC, his wins to date, he has two losses to Luque and Frivola. The Frivola one was by decision. He got finished by Luque, but he has a win on the Contender Series. Callan Potter, Joshua Koulibaly. Then it starts to turn up a little bit. Brock Weaver. And then his last two, Uro Smedic, who is very good. And then, of course, this last one, Jamie Malarkey. What do you think, BC?
I think I remember what I was going to say about Dana White, Luke, that
it's a great show.
I think I just forgot again, Luke. Yeah, we're on a great.
I
was gonna say, did you miss the old Hungry Desperate Dana? That's what I was gonna ask. Did you miss the guy that still would do some questionable things, but it was about elevating the sport and the brand? And like, do you miss that guy? It's like there's still a good part of that guy in there, of course. I mean, they're monstrously successful, but he's not fueled by that anymore, Luke. He's still fueled by fuck you, but not exactly like that.
Yeah, not exactly like, let's make the sport look the best in all circumstances. You know, I had 5 Red Bulls this morning kind of thing. That part is probably missing. But, dude, if you've had this much success, it's just not possible to maintain that kind of, you know, fucking game 7, bottom of the 9th.
You're damn right. And you'll burn the shit out, too. You'll burn. Luke, I have moments where I burn out, too, where I'm like, man, I can't keep this up at this level, can I? And then,
are we the Dana and Lorenzo? Is that who we are?
I won't make that joke. I can't make that joke. They'd remove me. All right, Luke, you asked me about Jalen Turner.
Yes.
The tarantula looked fantastic. What was the spirit of the question? Is he a future title challenger? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, what do you think? What's his upside, basically?
This fight was a great step forward in extending that, Luke. I'm not fully convinced yet. But this is like, he's not just some attraction now because his nickname is the tarantula and he's got weird spiders crawling all over the videos that we see, Luke. The guy's actually talented and explosive, but you are seeing the technique start to come together, the game planning. He's on his way there, Luke. I still want to see him prove me. Prove me right, though.
Yeah, exactly. Here's the thing. He is 26 years old. 26. Let's pump the brakes, everybody. We don't have to rush him anywhere. I'm not saying that the spirit of the question necessarily says that. But anytime we're like, oh, man, this young guy looks really good, we're all of a sudden like, well, who could he beat? He can probably beat lots of guys, but let's get him to a point where he is doing it systemically. He is doing it carefully. He is doing it in a planned and coordinated manner. Because if you ask me, these wins that he has, they're nice, but he does have those 2 losses, granted, to a very, very, very good Vicente Luque, and that was, you know, in 2018, 4 years ago. And in the case, the case of his last 2, no, those were much better opponents, and he dispatched with both of them as well. So it's the last 2 that tells you he's really beginning to turn the corner. But BC, you know, we still need to see a little bit more of him tested later in fights. What happens if guys don't fall into traps and he's in the 3rd round? What does his cardio look like? He's 26. So he looks awesome, but there's a lot of time left before we really have to ask broader questions about
who he is. But that was an aggressive opponent who brought a little out of him. So it was good to see that.
For sure.
Luke, what can the fans hope for on extra credit today?
Jalen Turner, we're going to talk about Kevin Holland as well. Kevin Holland quietly had a very good performance, albeit it took a little while to get going, but once he did, he was all in. We're going to talk about Sergey Spivak, Marina Rodriguez, lots of folks. So be on the lookout for that later today. All right, @_, why, do you have a question?
No, I just like to advertise our stuff. I want people to buy it. You know, so yes. I want, you know.
Buy
I
mean, it for
I,
free.
I'm not going to watch it. I'm sure it's going to be great, though.
You know what? I actually believe you this time. All right. BC, this one's all for you. How does Tim Zhu do in his American debut, and do you see little brother Nikita's pro debut?
Nikita will be making a brief appearance in Have You Seen This Shit very shortly. There are reports out there, Luke, that Tim Zhu's gonna headline a Showtime card against Terrell Gaucher. I know that Showtime is gonna unveil the full schedule this week, and you know, you see some of these potential reports or whispers, and it's looking strong. But dude, this is Tim Zhu's moment. I mean, that's a tough opponent. And it's tough to do this, to fly over, but this is the right time to do it. Let's make it an event. Let's make it a spectacle. And yeah, I think you got to favor him to win. I think he's gonna show you what he has in the moment. I just can't wait to see what Terrell Gaucher makes him show, because you know that guy can. There's a couple times where like you thought he was better and he found a plateau, but then there's other times where you know Gaucher let his hands go and he's got that amateur background. You're like, no man, that guy's a tough ass out. So this is a great matchup in that regard. Well, we're going to find that out. But if I'm going to guess whether Tim Zhu shines or not, right now the stock's on Tim Zhu shining, Luke.
Let me ask you real quick, for folks who are more familiar with his father and they may not know too much about Tim Zhu, give me like the 20-second pitch. What is it about Tim Zhu that excites you so much?
Well, first of all, just the way he attacks to the body with the left hand and the hooks is impressive and aggressive, and it stands out. and his dad was a boxer puncher, but a guy who can bang. But his dad was a little bit more on his toes, darting in and out. Tim's solid. And I mean that not only in the stance, in the way that he attacks, works behind the jab, very, very good technique, but his temperament, Luke, seems to be something special there. And that's not a surprise if you grew up as the son of a Hall of Famer and you probably traveled with him and idolized him and went to every event. I mean, this should feel normal for you, and it seems to feel very normal for him. And sometimes that doesn't matter in the end, and sometimes that gives you a reason to be so confident when you haven't seen him prove it yet.
And then last but not least, we see at Ross Rusty. Did you guys see the new Batman movie? And also, which is both of your favorite Batman movies? BC, what do you think?
I did not see this new one, Luke. Have you? That everyone's talking
no,
about?
No, I had Violetta duty by myself. My entire family is in Colombia. Well, my one side.
Oh, yeah, family, dude. So. And you saw that when you had your technical meltdown this morning, I think it was very fueled by poor sleep and over-parenting. It was like...
Yeah. I've not slept much in a few days, so I'm struggling like, a little bit.
I wouldn't have been surprised if you were like, you fucking kids, listen to me. You know what I mean? Just been like, you know, I mean, you were like daddy pants and gaffing me, but that's fine.
Okay. I'm sorry, BC. I'm sorry, BC. I was frustrated. I was frustrated, okay? I apologize formally. I mean that. Your favorite Batman movie is what?
Dude, remember we did the homework on MK COVID homework on the first Dark Knight, Luke?
Yes.
Or did we do it on the second one?
I think it was... The first one was with the Scarecrow. Second one was with...
Yeah, because I had seen the first one.
The second one was the Heath Ledger Joker.
The second one, that one, Luke, that one is untouchable. But I haven't seen them all, and I'm not like an aficionado, so I'm just kind of talking outside my ass a little, but my ass has been places. So, Luke.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not... Yeah.
That might surprise you. Yeah, wow.
Hey, what happened to the Twitter account, Morning Combat No Context? Because that would have been perfect for that.
Yeah. Okay. Sometimes we stumble into a hole like baby Jessica, Luke, and you know it happens, right? That's a deep cut. Damn, that's
dude,
a deep cut.
Do people know the baby Jessica reference? These are like 80s and 90s kids references that we all did that I don't think any of our fucking audience knows.
No.
I was going to say, I will say this.
That's why they haven't shut me down for those JonBenet jokes, Luke. That's why. Okay, nobody gets them anymore. Right?
Nobody knows like JonBenet. Who's that? Was that some kind of French waiter? Who is that? What I was going to say was BC. Two things. One, I've not seen the movie. Although I find it weird that every new generation tries to make Batman darker and grittier than the last one. It's like you don't have to do that, but okay. I'm with you. The Heath Ledger Dark Knight is probably the best one. I will say. Honorable mention to all of the animated Batman movies, and there was one that was done by a Japanese firm that makes it sort of does like it's like an alternate reality where Batman and Joker are in like 19th century Japan and they're shoguns and samurais and they're sort of fighting for control. That one was actually weird but very interesting and cool, so check that one out.
And Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift, I think, was the best one. So I'm not surprised, Luke. Okay, you know what I'm saying,
dude.
I mean, that's a great movie, dude. That's a great movie.
Is there anyone on earth who A likes the Fast and the Furious movies in like a real way, and B passed high school algebra? Is there does that Venn diagram overlap at all?
Does it have a January 6th connection? Oh, all right. I don't know about that, Luke. All right, can we show shit yet? We got
Yeah, let's show your shit, BC. We're done. All right. What you got?
All right. We scour the globe, the highs and lows, the good, the bad, the ugly, the in-between in combat sports and beyond. This one's called, Have You Seen This Shit?
You Know Who is back from the park and banging on my door. I don't know if you can hear it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You hear that?
He's like, I need to see Uncle Gringo's glasses now. That's a good deterrent, Luke, right? You should send all of her prospective boyfriends to me over Zoom. Okay. Yes, yes.
I can't believe this is the state of my life. Mia Moore, I'm working.
Yeah, all right. Hey, Luke, we start at UFC 272 in Las Vegas. Cowboy Oliveira getting his Johnny Walker on in the prep point. I know Cowboy's done this before, Luke, but I could tell you with probably a good deal of accuracy, he fucks, Luke. You know what I'm saying?
Doesn't he have like 79,000 children or something?
I don't know, but that's...
Who was it? Dude, who was the guy who played for the Jets? Was it Cromartie who had like 10 kids or whatever?
Yeah, That's a fact.
He's the Cromartie of the UFC. Just like a fuckload of kids, man. He's like, I don't like condoms.
You'll be talking Kevin Holland on Extra Credit, but after
hold
this...
Hold on. I mean, this is just a stupid fucking one. Here
we go. Oh, boy.
Come on. Yeah. You want to make a bunch of noise. Come on.
You're coming on. Hey, Tukey, if you're coming on, come on already, all right?
Tukes! Come here, Tukey. Come say hi to everyone that you're interrupting my day. I love you very much.
Come say hi. Oh, you don't want to say hi. Look how sad she is.
Hey, Tukey, do you want to see Uncle Gringo's glasses again?
She hates you, bro.
Yeah. It's assumed, you know. Yeah. All right. Oh, there she is, Luke. That's great.
Go ahead.
We got. Yeah. We don't have child abuse on. Have you seen this shit this week? So we should be good, Luke.
You want me to beat you up? Daddy, a park. You want to go to the park?
Splash pad, Luke. She wants the splash pad.
Let's keep going with the show. I'm sorry about this, BC. I have just no choice because there's no control over Godzilla.
Wow. Luke, Kevin Holland got put in a choke at the end of round one. I've never seen this before. He's like, no, I'm good, Luke. I'm good. The arm in,
rear naked choke. Those can work, by the way, but it's very difficult. It's very difficult.
Kevin Holland always showing you the swagger. I like it. He was so swaggery, Luke, that after his victory, he pulled the Derek Lewis, excuse me, put some respect on that, and removed his cup and tossed it to a lucky fan, Luke.
That is beyond disgusting. I mean, what are these people doing? I'm going to drink out of your shoe and then breathe out of your cup.
I mean, if somebody gifted you that, knowing that you're a huge UFC fan, anymore. Like if Tony Ferguson, Luke, no mas.
I can't. This is just, it's just, what is happening with my, anymore? No. All right. We're stuck here. I'm stuck here. This has been my weekend. I'm stuck here. I haven't slept. This is what I've been doing for 72 hours.
Yeah. You know, I forgive you okay. All right, Luke. I don't know if we're appropriate anymore, but Luke, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. Did you see Tim Elliott hold the glove of Tagir Ulambekov, which really pissed off Coach Khabib, Luke?
Yeah, dude, that's insane. I mean, you can grab the glove, obviously, on the top of it, and you can grab your own glove, which people don't realize. You can't grab someone else's glove like that. That's what Yoel Romero did to Tim Kennedy.
This is part of the Hinato Moicano ending, Luke, where he got pretty angry. I believe, tell me if I'm wrong, that Moicano, who threw blood all over and vehemently pushed back the cup man and the commission members, I think he was mad that he thought RDA was taking it easy on him, Luke, and he didn't want to get embarrassed that way. He wanted to be, he's like, you know, end me. You know what I'm saying? It was very Obi-Wan episode 4 at the end, Luke.
It was more like Anakin at the end of episode 4, to be honest with you.
Anakin was Vader at 4, Luke, okay?
Oh, at 4, yes. What am I saying? I'm in at 3. Sorry about that.
All right. Hey, Luke, let's keep it going. Brian Boom Kelleher, friend of the show, did not get the win against, good Lord, another Nurmagomedov who looks like a future champion. But he did get the spinning back fist bump from Bruce Buffer. Your thoughts, Luke?
Let's see. That stuff's a little played out to me. The fighters love it, and I guess if they love it, that's great. I don't seem to think it's all that interesting.
Okay, Luke.
I do love Brian Kelleher, though. Okay. Outside.
Luke, Real is going to recognize Real even backstage at UFC 272. Here's NFL and partying legend Michael Irvin posing with Kamaru Usman. Luke, we couldn't last 10 minutes in Michael Irvin's after hours world in the 1990s, Luke.
I don't think we could last 10 minutes in his after world now.
No.
I mean, can you imagine the kind of parties and the things he's seen and done? No, what? Yeah. Everyone's like, why is he so happy all the time? I don't know. He's lived a marvelous life and he's wealthy. I mean, wouldn't you be?
Got a great TV job. Yeah. Is kind of like an ambassador to the sport. Yeah.
Revered hero of America's most popular game, you know?
There it is, Luke. All right, DAZN Boxing from San Diego. Luke, just 3 months after the life-threatening motorcycle crash and spine surgery, shout-out to ring announcer David Diamante returning to work like
I saw that. Yeah,
than I thought was possible. Well done, sir.
Didn't he break like 7 or 8 major bones or something? I guess not. Yeah. I don't know what happened to him, but
I mean, he turned this around insanely quick. So a lot of determination in that fellow. So congrats, Luke, on this card. Unbeaten Diego Pacheco with a brutal KO2 of Cenk Pilana. Did you see this shit, Luke?
Only on replay. Yes.
Oh my god.
Oh golly, son.
That was some Ray Mercer, Tommy Morrison shit on the way down. Damn. Oh,
I mean, he had his hands down, and this dude just let him have it. Right. He steps in. Let's see what he's doing. He feints, goes over the top, and then steps through. Almost switches stances with the left hook. Yeah.
Luke, on the same card, this one might even be better. Did you see Mauricio Bronco Lara, who of course had that 2-fight series and that upset of Josh Warrington, beating the buzzer to end the round to finish off Emilio Sanchez?
I did see this one. This one made the highlights too. And this one could have been, this one, I was surprised. Well, I mean, look at this. He hangs on here and then this dude just lets him. Look at that body punching. Good Lord.
God.
All right, I'll walk you down.
Yep, finish
bop,
him.
Bop, bop, bop.
Shit, dude. Dude, that's got to be the KO of the year. Holy crap.
Dude, when it happens in MMA, a little bit less so, a little bit more in boxing. But these ones where they fall backwards, but their knees are in front, like they're the knees over toes guy, that is always a vicious knockout.
Gaff, can we go full screen here? We talked about the legend Chocolatito Roman Gonzalez and my love for him. Let's just admire his work for a second. Note, not only the soft footwork, but that, you know, he won't even always throw full speed, Luke, to get off these 4 or 5 punch combinations, and everything is accurate, and he's moving, and he's never, I mean, just a master.
And dude, watch how often he's in position and how often he pushes, like this, Martinez out of position. Even if he doesn't land, he pushes him out.
Great shit. Great shit from the legend here. Luke, let's go to the hardwood. Rough moment for former NBA player Shabazz Muhammad on this breakaway in the Filipino Basketball League. Oh, boy. That's, yeah. I mean,
remember our free throw shooting contest? It's not much more glorious than this.
Yeah. You're not supposed to wear the Cedric Ceballos blindfold during the game, Luke. That's not good at all. All right. Hey, what a week for Canelo Alvarez. The first face-off, Luke, of his May 7th light heavyweight title bout with Dmitry Bivol came out at the kickoff presser in San Diego. And Luke, you can see the very legitimate size difference as we talked about. Bivol, a very, very legit 175er, unbeaten, great boxer. But this is stylistically going to be a very interesting challenge.
Bivol, to me, a little bit smaller than Kovalev. I thought Kovalev was taller than Canelo in ways that Bivol was not. Obviously, Bivol's bigger, right? But
yeah.
Wasn't Kovalev a lot taller?
A lot taller, but he chose to box to stay safe rather than punch against Canelo, which was Kovalev's calling card, which made that fight so kind of weird, but yet a great victory for Canelo. Also, Luke, let's go to the sound here. You remember I had Oscar De La Hoya on this show, and you can listen to that interview at youtube.com/morningcombat. And he did say, yeah, you know, the Canelo-Ryan Garcia beef, we're going to settle it in the ring one day, 3 to 4 years from now at 165 pounds. They asked Big Red, Luke.
Oscar De La Hoya said that you and Ryan Garcia could potentially fight in the future. Just your comment.
That's joking.
Oscar De La
Hoya. He's joking, Luke. That's just joking. But Canelo's a badass. Luke.
Hey, don't joke about that. My wife talks just like that, so it's all right, bro. It's good. It's
Daddy
good.
Janky is one of my favorites,
Daddy,
Luke.
Daddy Janky, old Yaki's yogurt.
And look at these two. These two boxing lovers here, promoter Eddie Hearn putting his arm around Canelo. This is totally aimed at Oscar. This could be us, but you playing, right?
Yeah. Eddie Hearn is tall as shit, by the way.
Dude,
right?
He's 6'7". People forget that. He's a dashing gentleman, Luke.
Yeah,
like
he's
I said.
He's tall as fuck.
Yeah, he is. All right, and finally, Canelo exiting the parking lot in his 2019 Bugatti Chiron, which he purchased, Luke, for $3.04 million.
Now, BC, is this nicer than my 2015 Mazda CX-5?
By a bit, Luke. I mean, good. What does it do? Does it fly? You paid $3 million for it, Luke. What the hell does it do? Does it have a slushy machine in it? I mean, come on.
Dude, my wife one time, you can do this. You can pay to drive a luxury automobile around a racetrack. Have you ever done that?
I haven't, but it sounds fun as crap. It
sounds fun as balls, except this is before the weight gain, too, by the way. I couldn't fit in a McLaren. I was too tall for the McLaren. So they put me in, what did they put me in? Like a Porsche, I think. Dude, driving one of those cars versus the shit they sell on the side of the road at some dealership, they're not even in the same league of machine. It's a completely different experience. I can only imagine. I mean, you like by rule, don't you have to get blown if you're driving this car? Like, I think that's just the rule. I think that's the law.
I mean, look, the packages vary, Luke, in terms of the accessories, but I think that is the they do offer that.
Yeah. I need surround sound. I need Yokohama tires, and I need to get blown consistently as I'm behind the wheel.
I mean, for $3 million, Luke, it might be justified. All right, hey, Luke. Some people don't have that money. In fact, some can't afford a can opener, Luke, but. No can opener, no problem for this legend of the game.
Yeah, this man isn't a hero, and if they haven't given him the Congressional Medal of Honor, I don't know why.
I don't understand it, but wow, right?
That dude has definitely seen some crazy shit in his life.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Where was this?
I don't know. I don't know the details. I want to know. I want to have him on the show, Luke, to be fair. All right? There it is. There it is right there. All right, Luke, can I ask you a personal question? Have you ever surfed before?
Poorly.
All right. Well, have you ever surfed a D before, Luke? Oh, yeah.
That surfboard is hilarious. And he's got stickers on it, too. He's like, yeah, I ride this every week.
Yep. Rocco Surf Shop bought it right there. Yep. Oh, wow, Luke. Okay. And wholesome news.
He got this
news
at the Lex the Impaler next to Ron John's Surf Shop. Yeah.
Luke, I got some wholesome news. Cindy Craven was finally made a legitimate woman by her longtime boyfriend, Charles. And here's their engagement announcement, Luke. Yeah, yes, she was, Luke. Yes. Bang, yes.
Look at her too. She's like, yep.
It says it right there. Yep, you're damn right. Wow. Okay, Luke. Big week for pro debuts in the squared circle of boxing there, Luke. Nikita Zhu, the son of Kostya, brother of Tim, like we talked about, wins his pro debut, second round knockout. Luke, he had taken 5 years off to go to college, but he is a four-time amateur in the past. He's 27 years old. And look, you don't typically face, you know, a world beater in your pro debut, but there's his brother cheering him on. He looks like he belongs, Luke. I think he belongs here. All right.
Yeah, let's see. Your pro debut, you're fighting, you know, the, as you like to put it, the guy who drove the Uber there. You're not really fighting the very best, but you're not supposed to. It's your pro debut. So.
Yeah, you know that can that Asian fella opened with his teeth? That's who you're fighting. But hey, yes. Nikita Zhu is probably at right now. We got to follow him, Luke, every step of the way, okay?
All right, let's do it.
All right. Luke, 2020 Olympic silver medalist Richard Torres Jr., the heavyweight, made his pro debut on Friday, just 22 years old. And he just needed two rounds to dispose of Adam Melson, Luke. This was good shit.
This was a bit of a donk fest. I mean, Torres looks like he actually might be interesting to follow. But the other guy was, I mean, this was regional MMA, but, you know, obviously not, it's not. Yeah. But it had all the, you know, the Benny Hills sketch of... I mean, look at him. He's just sort of getting turned here, and it's just a show.
Yeah, just need like a half-dressed nurse running away from Benny. That's what this needs.
Yeah,
and then a Me Too, probably.
I like how I like how that dude's entire brand is now impossible in the year 2022.
Yeah. He's like Harvey Weinstein's. You stole everything I work for, motherfucker. Like, hey, Bill Cosby. You know what I mean? Like, come on, bro.
It's like, dude, if you didn't grow up with Benny Hill as like on your Comedy Central or TV, it's hard to explain. The dude's brand was sexual harassment and chasing women around all day long. That's what it was.
We used to get it late at night on WPIX 11 out of New York. Was like the greatest regional cable channel of all time because all they ever played was like Charles Bronson movies and shit like that all the time. That channel would play Benny Hill at like 1 a.m. on the weekends. And like as a little kid, you'd run into that. You'd be so fired up, Luke. Okay. Luke Torres could handle himself in the ring. He looked pretty decent. But did you see him with the Rubik's Cube?
Yeah.
They claim he's also a magician and he builds rockets. I'm not making this up, Luke. There it is. Wow.
I got to say, someone was telling me he was close to the end stage when he did this. I don't know because I don't play with the Rubik's Cubes, but it looks pretty fucking fast to me, bro.
Yeah. And dude, we've all left around with one. My brain doesn't work that way, Luke. And I don't think that surprises you one bit.
No, I don't think that it does. Although, look at the traps on this dude, too. Good Lord. Yeah, those things touch his fucking ears, man.
He's coming. Luke. We'll find out what he's made of. Eastern Europe, Luke, it's like regional MMA. It's just a different place. Check out this fight training sequence, which involves a bear, Luke.
Bro, look at this bear working on his triceps. Fuck y'all. He's going to be... It's out. He's trying to look good in a tank top in the summer. Don't be policing what my bears do. These other two... I don't know what the fuck they're up to, but the bear is the star of this video. I want to be clear about that.
Luke, speaking of Europe, wild weekend of boxing results.
Hold on, last thing. Just further proof, BC, I don't care if you live in Russia, United States, Canada, wherever. People who live in the forest, they're different, bro. They're completely different people.
Well said. Very, very well said. All right, Luke, did you see this headbutt? I don't know the fighters. I don't even know what country, but this has been going all over. Oh, there's the fighter names.
Ooh.
Right there. Oh, shit, Luke.
Dude, what was that?
Illegal. That's what that was, Luke. That's assault, okay? Yeah.
Holy shit, that was just blatant.
Well, Luke, got a little wilder here. I don't even know if this is the same show, but this other video is making the rounds. I'm going to guess Europe, the fan getting involved.
Oh, hell yeah. These must be people who live in the forest as well.
And then look at that. They got, Royal Rumble, Luke, over the top. Hogan wins. Unbelievable.
Where the fuck is this?
How about that security taking care of that shit, bro?
Yeah, here he comes in the ring. The two boxers are like, what the fuck? And he's talking shit. And then they just, whoop, chuck his ass out.
Oh, yeah.
Boom.
And everybody wants to get their shot in on this donk. Yeah, absolutely, Luke. All right. T-shirt of the week time, Luke. Finally, somebody has the balls to tell the truth. I mean, as you always say, how can I criticize that, Luke, if I've, you know what I mean?
Let he who is without sin cast the first stone, my friend.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Luke, I'm not into slap fighting at all, but there were a lot of people cared about this Logan Paul thing. Did you see this KO, though, and Logan Paul, the promoter's reaction? Good Lord. There's Arnold. There's Todd Harris of the WEC, Luke. Yeah.
Yeah, this is not... I mean, look at Schwarzenegger sitting down, just like, what has happened to my life? I love Schwarzenegger. He's my hero, but... And he put this at the Arnold, and I get that he's trying to experiment. If you don't know what the Arnold is, it's like the biggest bodybuilding / weightlifting / powerlifting expo in the world.
It's got Luke. It's got an amateur wrestling vibe to it too, though, right?
Here's what's funny. Strikeforce used to put on events in Columbus, Ohio, where this is traditionally held, on the same weekend, and there would be like an MMA Arnold crossover. Yeah. They have stopped doing it. I don't know.
WWE used to do that too, and try to link up with it as well. Yeah. Okay.
I like how the slap fighters look like they're wearing Venom kits too. By the way, look at that.
Yeah, dude. I don't like every combat sport. I really don't like the slap shit, Luke. Slap sticks.
It started out as like a weird thing they did on radio stations back in like the late 90s, early 2000s, yeah. And it just took on a life like this, which I don't quite. Yeah,
I mean, it's really stupid. It really is. All right, Luke, proud dad alert. Look, if you don't have much to brag about, Luke, and one day you're probably already bragging to every person you meet because, look, Tukey is that incredible, Luke. I'll give her that. But check out this dad at the airport. Just telling it like it is. He is proud of his girl.
Congrats, Melinda. Out of prison yesterday. Start parole today.
She made it, Luke. She made it, okay?
Bro, is this guy the biggest dad who ever dadded? He's got the wrong size shorts on.
Yeah.
He's got socks up to his calves, which, by the way, it's okay. He's got the keychain hanging off the side, shirt tucked in with a belt from 1993.
There's definitely a key to a basketball gym on that roll of keys. And Luke, there's an Emily Whitmire tattoo on his left forearm. You know, it turns out, wow. All right.
Probably. And look at his sneakers. He definitely got those at the worst place to ever buy sneakers, much to the chagrin of his child.
Yeah,
this guy's, and that belt buckle is doing a lot of work right now. A lot of work.
He's happy, Luke, okay? His daughter's free. Congrats, we talked about Eddie Hearn being 6'7", Luke. He put on the gloves last week against Matchroom Sports CEO Frank Smith. And look at the towering inferno Eddie Hearn go to the body here.
Are they doing no head punches? What are they doing?
Oh, shit. Yes, just body work. Oh, he's not getting up from that. Frank Smith not getting up from that.
I mean, my man's got the worst haircut on earth, and you know, I'm not gonna judge, but he's got a few extra LBs on him, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Are you impressed by Eddie's skill at all? I mean, it's not Stephen A. Smith, I'll tell you that.
No, I'm not impressed.
Okay, Luke. Couple more to end it. Luke, this week in marijuana, let's end with this, okay? First of all, I've got what I think is the world's worst first 4-foot blunt, Luke. Your thoughts?
Oh, I mean, put it in my veins.
Yes, that gets the World Star stamp on that screen. Absolutely.
Like, I wouldn't care if this dude had COVID. He could blow all that smoke in my face. It's quite all right.
Well, Malka and Showtime have come together, Luke, for your birthday, and they are going to gift you one hit of this, Luke. The I don't know what you call it there. The full frontal treatment here, Luke. You could not handle this.
I'm like a cat who has seen a squirrel for the first time. If you don't do this for my birthday, you're dead.
But sir, it could kill you. You're damn right. Yes,
I certainly could. Hope.
Yeah. He went out doing what he loved. Yep, that is unbelievable, though. Wow. Wow. Okay, that's all the shit I got this week, Luke. That's great.
Pretty good, BC. Pretty good. All right. With that in mind, we have time for odds and ends. What do you got?
Anthony Joshua has finally announced the new trainer. It didn't end up being the sexy pick we thought it might, as he did kind of a tour of the world of the biggest trainers in boxing today. He ends up picking his longtime assistant, Angel Fernandez, who, to be honest, Luke, I don't know really much about at all beyond the name. So we'll see what kind of effect that has. But, Luke, we're obviously in such a weird time because of the Russian invasion in Ukraine and God, the courage of these elite Ukrainian boxers who are just going, you know, just going for it right to the front line and manning up and arming, you know, and all that. It's like, it's weird. It's like, I don't even know what, you know, I mean, it sounds stupid to say like what the heavyweight division, looks like in the next 18 months, because, you know, Usyk's the champion. He's got 3 or 4 belts, but you know, he was on that CNN interview. And, you know, the announcer had gotten, the question asker had gotten trolled for basically saying, you know, when do you think your rematch with Joshua will take place? And he's like, I don't care, you know, never, like, you know, my country, my God, my family, like, you know, like, holy, of course, you know. So it will be interesting, Luke, just in that regard, because, you know, yeah, Tyson Fury is going to fight Dillian White. But I don't know what the future brings for Anthony Joshua or that rematch or what have you. It's obviously wait and see in so many more categories, way more important than heavyweight boxing.
Yeah, last thing on this, by the way, I tweeted it out last night. You can still see it on my timeline. There was, I you know, it's hard to know what information is accurate coming from there. I mean, do your best. We're all trying our best. But there was a video of a captured Russian soldier sort of explaining his view that, like, here's what we thought we were going in. We had some reason to think that, you know, maybe we didn't exactly understand it, but they basically believed that the Ukrainians were waiting to be, this was what he said, that they understood their job as a humanitarian act and that Ukrainians were waiting to be liberated. They weren't totally sure, but that was their general orientation. And he said the first time he was really jolted awake at how untrue that was, he says his two favorite boxers, and he mentions them by name, were Usyk and Lomachenko. And he said when they joined the resistance, he was like, oh, right. Like, this is not at all what we thought it was. But he mentions them by name in this video. So if you haven't seen it, again, you know, who knows what's accurate and whatnot, but it was an interesting piece of content to say this. Put it mildly, I'll put it that way. Anyway,
yeah, dude. Holy crap, Luke. It's rough, Luke. And by the way, not related at all, but kind of related. First, I wanted to make sure: are you going to do Umar Nurmagomedov in your extra credit? Because that guy deserves a lot of talking about, Luke.
I am.
Okay?
I am. Yep.
And number two, the Marina Moroz moment, you know, being from Ukraine and in a very emotional speech. And I'm glad they gave, you know, Joe even gave her the mic and was like, go for it. It was great. But what'd you feel about some of the Russian fighters, you know, getting booed? Because it's like, you know.
Not Khabib. They didn't boo Khabib.
I mean, yeah, but like these guys aren't on the front lines trying to make this war happen. So
I know these are just ordinary people. I mean, again, I go back to the famous story during Bodog fight when Trevor Prangley fought Yuki Kondo, I think in Philly or somewhere like that. And the whole crowd was chanting USA, USA. But the problem is Trevor Prangley is from South Africa. They just couldn't tell. So that was always a fun little thing. I don't try to get too
racism. Yeah, look, I got it. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like you're cheering for the white guy just because he's white. It's a little bit of a problem, but okay. We'll have to see what happens there. My quick odds and ends. They put this on the broadcast. I wouldn't have otherwise known about it, but Drake, the hip-hop artist from Canada, bet $275,000, BC, on Masvidal, and then lost it all. Now, BC, isn't there a Drake curse? Where I guess like he was like supporting like Duke or UNC or whoever, and they would lose, and then he'd show up to like some other sporting event, and they would all fucking lose, and then McGregor and he lost to Mayweather. Boy,
our
the Drake curse
Mikey
continues,
is saying
huh?
Kentucky basketball, Alabama football. There was a
oh, that's right, because he's also
there,
like he's also like a bandwagon fan. Where like I mean, he's not a bandwagon fan for the Raptors because he's from Toronto, I guess, but for like the American teams, he just gloms on to like the big winning programs or whatever.
Yeah,
anyway,
yeah, he's
fuck
a celebrity.
Drake.
That's
fuck
what they
Drake
do.
Is my
celebrities favorite. Are leeches to hot winning teams and rubbing their star against it, Luke. We know that shit, all right?
BC, yeah, what sports team, if this show just blew up and we were like, you know, 10 times bigger than Joe Rogan podcast, bigger than you could ever imagine, and there could be one sports team who could offer you season tickets for life, who would it be that you take it from?
Great question, Luke. College and pro or just pro?
College and pro.
I the Boston Celtics would be my pick, but I was considering Penn State football, Luke. But I don't really want to spend that many days in Happy Valley, though. You know.
Yeah, not. I won't go there. I will not go there.
No, not because of that. There. No,
I will not go there.
Not because
BC's
of that.
Like hashtag Sandusky. Yeah, I would have liked to have picked the Commanders, but they're just so awful I can't. I would probably go with the Wizards, even though it's not really an inspiring choice. All right, BC, that is it for us. Now, are they reminding us we have a top of the morning collection? I believe this is the merch collection, BC.
Yeah, yes. This is a part of our St. Patrick's Day package at morningcombat.store that RJ Dunkel Cracker that has so, you know, expertly curated, Luke, and put together. You know, he doesn't clear the shit with us, but it works, Luke. I saw that onesie. You could outfit your child in an MK St. Patrick's Day onesie today, Luke, and the bibs as well. And, you know, I can't throw a stone at kids for wearing a bib anyway, Luke. I spill food on my shirt right out of my mouth every meal, probably every meal, Luke.
BC, we find out that stuff is on the store by going to the store. We don't ever see mock-ups. We don't ever see ideas. We just see results.
That's why I'm saying RJ's throwing like a perfect game right now. He's like Doc Ellis on acid, just slinging curveballs right now. And it's working, you know? It's like.
Also, we need to take some new pics with us posing in merch because I look fat as fuck in all these photos. And I've lost a lot of weight since we took
them. Was skinny then. I've put on another, you know, little bit here, Luke. But after, you know, getting COVID and hurting my back and just being an old bitch hibernating in the winter, Luke, which is really my MO. It's my survival move, Luke. You know,
they should sell BC yoga pants because your bitch ass does yoga on the regular. Yes,
we do. We have the white sweatpants with the MK logo on it. Those
true.
Are comfortable as heck.
All right. Reminder. MorningCombat.store, you can go there. Showtime.com is the label that pays. 30-day free trial. If you like it, you can keep it. If not, you can do something else. MorningCombat@gmail.com. Wednesday's fan subs, Friday's dead wrong. Anything else you need to reach the show about, that's how you do it. And
now,
of course,
people be on the lookout, Luke. The Showtime boxing announcement, I think even in the next 24 hours, is look like it's going to be a big rollout with a lot to talk about, you know, I'm sure, on Wednesday's show, Luke. I got my traveling schedules getting in the way. I can't be on Wednesday's Morning Combat show.
So you're going to be on Showbox on Friday, correct?
Yeah, that was literally the only flight that gets you eventually from Hartford to Rapid City. So, yeah. So
have fun there. You
know, yeah. Deadwood Deadwood, baby. All right, I'm coming. Deadwood. I'm coming for you. Yeah.
All right, so there you have it. Thumbs up on the video. Hit subscribe. Leave a nice review on the podcast. We'll be back on Wednesday. Be on the lookout for more interviews and extra credit coming your way as well. For CBS, for Showtime, for Malka, for BC, I'm LT. We'll see you guys next time. And until then, may all of your gains be loyal.